Welcome to this conversation from the Pan American Development Foundation. My name is Deanna Johnson, and I'm a program coordinator on the migration team. Our team works in 10 countries across Latin America and the Caribbean to provide sustainable solutions for individuals who have been forced to flee their homes in search of better, safer lives. From emergency humanitarian assistance in the Darien province of Panama, to vocational training for adults in Aruba and Curacao, and educational opportunities in Trinidad and Tobago, we strive to provide support services that are effective, participatory, and create sustainable change. Our work is made possible thanks to the support of the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. I am very thrilled today to be speaking with Camila Moraine, who was our Deputy Director for PADF's Trinidad and Tobago office. Ms. Moraine, a native from Trinidad and Tobago, has over 14 years of experience as a humanitarian and development professional. She has worked in South America, the Caribbean, and the Sahel region of Africa, managing programs in the areas of food security and nutrition, cash transfers, resilience and recovery, sustainable and vulnerable livelihoods, as well as disaster preparedness and response. Ms. Moraine has leveraged her extensive humanitarian background with her knowledge of Trinidad and Tobago politics and culture to successfully implement programming that supports refugees and migrants in politically sensitive environments. Camila is an expert on the innovative work we're doing to address educational and protection needs for children in Trinidad and Tobago. Welcome, Camila. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Deanna. Happy to be here.
As you know well, there are often monetary or logistical barriers that prevent migrant children from fully accessing education. However, Trinidad and Tobago is unique in that it affirmatively does not allow migrant children to receive an education. Could you explain for us this context a little bit more and what risks it poses for children?
Sure. So firstly, I'd like to say that PADF is doing quite a lot within this area alongside its partners to offer children education and protection opportunities, despite some of the challenges that you would have raised. Children on the move generally face enormous challenges, which limit their access to educational opportunities in countries where there is not a targeted policy that seeks to include them in the education system there, or does not address their specific needs. So following the June 2019 registration in Trinidad and Tobago, children of registered adults were granted the right to remain in Trinidad and Tobago, but they did not receive authorization to attend school. Mm-hmm. And foreign nationals, as a requirement, must be in possession of a student permit. And this is a legal requirement for them to attend school. The issuance of these permits is dependent on the Ministry of National Security. And to date, there are about 4,000 children in the country of school age that are unable to participate in any form of the local education system. Wow. And this presents a number of risks, of course, and they are including but not limited to exploitation of children through child labor networks, social isolation of children. The lack of local integration for children also means that they're unable to learn the language properly and perform normal functions within their community that other children do. Additionally, I think that there's about 40% of children from this group in Trinidad and Tobago that have been out of school for a period that is exceeding 2 years. And this means that you have a higher incidence of school dropouts for these children. This, of course, impacts adversely their learning outcomes and their ability to succeed in the school system, and it drastically cuts off their opportunities to earn income in the future and to lead dignified lives. And it increases their risk of remaining in poverty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as you're mentioning, there are a number of protection issues that are born out of not being able to access schooling for children and for their families as well. And so what are some of the things that PADF and its partners are doing to offer migrant children education or protection opportunities despite the challenges that you've described?
So since 2019, PADF has been working actively with many stakeholders here in Trinidad that have an interest in advancing children's rights and the access of children to education.
Mm-hmm.
We are an active member of the Education Working Group, and the stakeholders there include UNICEF, local CSOs, a representative of the Ministry of Education, the UNHCR, and also the Catholic Board of Education Management, just to name a few. And together with these stakeholders, we're working to bring about systemic and structural changes that would result in greater access to education and improve equity in education in Trinidad and Tobago. I would say that in addition to this, PADF and UNICEF work with two partners, TTV SALTnet and the Living Waters community, to support the education of just over 200 high school students who all participate in a global online school platform, which provides them with the opportunity to continue their education and to receive accredited instruction. UNHCR and UNICEF also supports the education of primary school age children through a Notes Master program. And it reaches several hundred children in that way. PADF as an organization has also worked extensively with the University of the West Indies to develop an English as a second language curriculum that is aligned to the national primary school curriculum of Trinidad and Tobago. And that concerns children age 5 to 11. And it's the first of its kind in the Caribbean. The curriculum was piloted with 30 teachers who were trained on how to teach the national primary school curriculum content to children who did not speak English as their first language. And we also developed a workbook to support Spanish-speaking children's learning of English in the classroom using the content and language integrated learning approach. COVID-19 for us meant a shift in the paradigm of sorts. And it has forced educators to think about how learning materials are delivered to learners and how they can be supported outside of the classroom setting and context. So in an attempt to expand educational opportunities for primary school children, last year, the Education Working Group engaged in consultations and interviews with students, parents, teachers, and online service providers. And the group is currently reviewing the results of those consultations and interviews in order to come up with a solution that meets the needs of children in the current moment, while we're still seeking to achieve some kind of longer term goal of full inclusion for migrant children into the local education system of the country.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you bring up the Education Working Group and our work with University of the West Indies and TTV Solidarity Network and others, because one thing that we really emphasize here at PADF is being able to rely on the coordination with other partners, as that makes our work more sustainable. So could you talk a little bit more about the role of our local and regional, as well as our international networks, in the work that we've been doing to protect and provide education for children on the move in Trinidad and Tobago?
Well, I think that in this area, I would say that it is really and truly a collaborative effort. I think the local networks, including the local diaspora organizations that are operating in this field, do have a unique understanding of the population that is being served. And they do also have a personal stake in ensuring that these children are able to thrive in their new environment. So there's a lot of commitment there to support these children and ensure that they're successful, ensure that programs are well-resourced, and ensure that they're getting the highest level of care and opportunities that could be available to them. And I think that that is also the case with respect to international and multilateral agencies that are working towards achieving this goal. UNICEF leads a technical team that ensures that educational standards are of the appropriate level. and that the children that benefit from these programs are not just learning, how should I say, not just learning information, but they're also learning how to live in their new societies, in their new communities,
mm-hmm.
and that they're gaining skills that can be transferred and that are transferable to other aspects of their lives, whether or not they remain in Trinidad and Tobago or they choose to move on with their families. And I think that this is very important, that children be equipped to learn and continue learning, but also be equipped to apply that learning wherever they might find themselves in the world, particularly with this highly mobile Venezuelan population.
Agreed, agreed. I do, and PADF does recognize the importance of supporting children outside of just education to be able to really succeed as they are living in their host communities or moving on to other communities. And so with that, I wanted to just ask you about, apart from educational components, we know that there are challenges in social integration within Trinidad and Tobago for children and their families. So could you tell us a bit about what PADF and its partners are doing to address xenophobia on the island, particularly for children?
So I would say that on the question of integrating, social integration of children, we have really invested a lot in this area. In late 2020, we launched A Story of Hope, and it recounts the experience of migrants and their journeys to Trinidad and Tobago. We worked with a visual artist, Brianna McCarthy, and the author, Darren Sandy, to render images and to distill many of the stories that were collected. And this formed the basis for a children's bilingual picture book.
Mm.
We held a virtual reading caravan at local schools and at libraries. And we also worked with the artist to do small in-person readings and art sessions with children so that they could engage with the materials and the subject matter that the book dealt with. And we disseminated the book throughout the library networks in Trinidad and Tobago, and that was extremely helpful. And what we found was that when we engage with children, regardless of their nationality, all children were very interested in the subject matter, but also concerned about how they could help make things better. So children have an enormous degree of empathy, and that is able to translate, I think, into an approach that will probably help facilitate school integration.
Right.
Because one of the challenges people often raise is, how can these children probably coexist in the same space with our children, seeing as they don't speak the language and they have a different culture, but also seeing that resources may be stretched too thin? But we see that these are preoccupations for adults, and there are policy measures that can be put in place to alleviate these concerns. But children themselves are quite open to welcoming other children into their spaces and working with them. And cohabitating and existing alongside them. Another thing that we have done is that we've worked extensively with the Heroes Foundation in order to promote older adolescent and youth integration in Trinidad and Tobago society of migrant children. And this has been extremely successful, even with the COVID-19 challenges and having to do most of this work virtually. We were able to engage a substantial number of migrant youth and older adolescents, as well as local youth and older adolescents, in cultural exchange programs and initiatives that range from linguistic exchange programs to culinary exchange programs, and even their participation in a home gardening project together, where the children of both communities were able to work together in order to produce community gardens. and examine the question of food security in their households during COVID-19, where many of them were impacted by income loss, significant income loss within their households.
Fantastic. Both of those initiatives sound just truly fantastic. And I have been able to see the Story of Hope book, and the drawings are beautiful. Brianna McCarthy has done a great job, and the story is wonderful. So I can only imagine how much that is doing amongst the children to really help with integration, and to help host community children as well as migrant children settle better into the community, into their Trinidad and Tobago communities. Yeah,
it was really great. And I think also that PADF did not just stop there. We did a lot of work locally, but we also reached out to and engaged with many experts. We touched base with Professor Baba, for example, who works out of Harvard, and she's an expert in working with children on the move. And we discussed in depth issues that affect migrant children and how we should probably integrate those issues or address those issues in our programming. And the exchanges with her were deeply insightful and helpful in us being able to understand how we should not just formulate our programs, but approach the topic with children, but also within the wider community. And I think that those things are also very helpful. Finding information and assistance from people who really do have that experience and that track record working in this field.
Right. So as you're going through these conversations with experts and practitioners working in the field, what kinds of short and long-term activities are you thinking that we're going to be needing to make sure that children in Trinidad and Tobago are protected and can really build prosperous lives in their new homes?
I think that we should not neglect the importance of inclusion-focused work. We still need to do a lot in the area of ensuring that children who are Venezuelan migrants or born to Venezuelan migrants are integrated as much as possible into the society, into the communities in where they live, and also are encouraged to have exchanges with local community members and other children of their age. And one of the things that is really important for that is ensuring their access to school. So while we are having these attempts to provide immediate access to education for them, it is primordial that we continue to work towards their full integration into the local school program that exists, so that they will then be part of a community and feel that sense of belonging and be able to, I think, be able to better assimilate to the society that has welcomed them thus far. Another thing that I would say is we need to look at the question of ending the detention of migrant children. And this is very important because during the COVID-19 pandemic, Trinidad and Tobago had a very strict rule with respect to border closures. And this meant that people who were seeking family reunification or who were seeking asylum were denied the right to apply for international protection. And this was a very sad state of affairs. Children in these circumstances were detained, and some of them were also deported as a result of these exercises. So we do need to work consistently alongside the relevant authorities, but we also need to mobilize efforts among other local NGO or CSO entities to take a stand against child detention, and also to allow children to reunify with their families, where this is actually something that is being sought actively by many families that have been separated between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela. We need to I think look more closely as a country that is not just a signatory, but that has ratified the Convention on the Rights of the Child. We need to look more closely at how we implement our obligations to children. And we need to put the best interest of the child first when making any decisions that concern that child, be it a question of guardianship, be it a question of shelter, be it a question of it's not right that this child return to Venezuela, right? Be returned to Venezuela right now, maybe even if they don't have family here that we can identify, simply because returning them to Venezuela, we may not be able to identify any family members over there to welcome them. So these are things that I think really need to be considered. We need to do, we need to have a mechanism that determines what is the best interest of the child and then provides guidelines to different entities on how they should then go forward with meeting the needs of these children that have been separated, that are unaccompanied, or maybe here, but are living in very deplorable situations. And finally, I would say one of the things that we have been noticing, and it came out in a survey that was done by the IOM recently, is that you have a large number of children that are being born to Venezuelan migrants in Trinidad and Tobago. And these children have the right to a nationality. And they have the right to Trinidad and Tobago nationality. However, because of COVID, but also a lot of other bureaucratic barriers, I think in procedural for the most part, many children who are born and who are entitled to nationality by birth in Trinidad and Tobago have not been able to access that nationality in a meaningful way that allows them to also benefit from the rights that are attendant to that nationality. And this problem needs to be resolved because these children should be treated like any other child in Trinidad and Tobago. They should have access to all of the services that are due to them by virtue of being a Trinidad and Tobago national. And this is something that we can only do if we ensure that our legislation, our procedures, and our policies are in alignment with standards and norms that have been established, that we have adhered to, and that the capacity and the resources are made available to agencies that have to implement these actions. And yeah, I think that those are a few of the things that we would need to work on in the longer term.
Thank you so much, Camilla. That really gives us a lot to think about. That gives us a great roadmap on how we should be moving forward as we're engaging with stakeholders and partners within Trinidad and Tobago and the broader Caribbean. So I do want to just thank you for this really, really fruitful conversation. I know we're going to be continue having these conversations internally about how we can continue to support migrant children and their families, as well as integrate them into Trinidad and Tobago and make sure that they can access their rights fully. And then we also are going to be talking about how we can take the important lessons learned from Trinidad and Tobago and apply it to other countries within the region or within the broader Latin America. So thank you so much. This was excellent.
Thank you. It was a pleasure speaking to you today.
Thank you very much for tuning into our conversation today. You can learn more about our work to support migrant children and families in Trinidad and Tobago and other countries across the hemisphere by visiting www.padf.org and by following us on social media at padf.org. The music you heard in this episode is Positive Fuse by French Fuse. If you have any questions about this podcast or the information you heard on it, you can contact us at migration@padf.org. Thanks again for listening.